Vantus Walkie by Manifest Merlin. For Monster Stuck 2024, a competition run on the Homestuck Fan Author Coalition server. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey.
Was brillig when they set to leave. The clock struck four, and the twins stood in the atrium of their modest abode. Both were young men, unaccustomed to their recent adulthood, but holding themselves as best they could considering the loads on their backs, two large rucksacks, filled identically, a mirror of the twins themselves. In almost every way the pair were identical, the same gilded hair that ended at the base of their neck, the same pure white suits like they were on their way to a party at the manor of a lord, although neither of them knew of such things, and the same long blades attached at their hips by their belt. They were vorpal, sharp and beheading, both the twins and the swords. The only difference allowed between the two of them, by a lack of ability to change it, was their eyes. Dirk's were an orange as stark as the sunset, while Dave's were a red as brilliant as blood. They were seen off by their trainers, men who called them brothers and looked the part. Older, perhaps wiser, taller, and so uncannily similar to the twins that it made them uncomfortable, although they had long since learned that to say as much would be quite foolish. The elders remind them of their swordplay, of their mission, of the foes.
"Avoid the jaws that bite," said Dave's brother. "And the claws that catch," nodded Dirk's brother.
"Do not show emotion, do not rage, do not delight, do not despair," Dave's brother said, placid as a lake.
"Beware the ever-passionate Jub-Jub bird, should it have a chance to distract you. Do not show distinction. Do not order one another," Dirk's brother added.
"Shun the devil's obsessed bandersnatch, the chance to target a leader."
The twins nodded in sync, and carefully, oh so carefully, walked together out the door and into the woods. The house was a short walk to the shore, through which they allowed themselves some slight dissimilarities as they looked around, as it still wasn't certain that they were far enough away not to be reprimanded for speaking out of turn. At the same time, there were many beasts about. Dirk's favourite were the toves, slick-furred, black-and-white-striped beasts that spun like corkscrews through the ground for their food, as they were currently in the middle of. He liked to name them to himself, based on how the stripes bent across their bodies. His favourites were a pair who worked together often, one with triangular zags and one with rectangular bumps that he respectively thought of as Sawtooth and Squarewave. Thus he spent most of the journey to the shore with his gaze towards the ground. Dave, meanwhile, was more partial to the borogoves, pathetic and miserable birds who could barely fly and looked more like living feather dusters than anything else. It was only by miracles and Dave's frequent decision to help them back into their nests that they survived as a species. Thus he spent most of the journey to the shore with his gaze towards the branches. Eventually the trees receded, replaced with sand and pebbles and water that lapped at the land like a dried dog. The boat the twins would take to the island was already waiting for them, just like it had since they had started training. The queen, or was she the empress now? She had long promised to award countless honours and valours and triumphs upon any who brought back the head of the fearsome Jabberwock. Their brothers could not do so themselves. And so now it fell to the twins. Dirk sat in the boat and pulled out their map as Dave silently pushed the vessel into the waves. Only then, as the coast receded over the horizon, did they allow themselves to speak.
"So what's the map say?"
Dave asked as he slowly paddled to the island they have heard of but never seen.
"Maps don't talk, Dave," Dirk said simply, his eyes scanning the paper that he held between them.
"You know what I mean," Dave said.
"It doesn't say anything," Dirk sighed, turning it around for Dave to see. "It's blank."
"Oh, that's great. I mean, normal maps are full of a bunch of pointless markings and symbols," Dave said sarcastically. "We're lucky to have one with none of that nonsense."
"Aren't we just?" Dirk turned to watch the empty sea ahead of them.
It took them a week to the exact hour to reach the island. They had slowly eaten through half of their rations, leaving them with just enough for their triumphant return. After all, it wasn't as though they would be returning in failure. Such a scenario would prevent them from returning at all. The island looked almost like a mirror of where they had just come from, with a sandy shore that led into a dark, foreboding forest. The slight difference was that the danger in this forest was heard of but unknown, whereas the danger back home was well known but rarely heard before it arrived. The pair slowly stalked into the trees after beaching their boat, and more differences revealed themselves. The forest had no familiar borogoves, nor beloved toves to distract them from their goal. Just trees, unfamiliar dark wooded trees, and the sound of the stale air.
"So, how do we know if we're close to the thing?" Dave asked quietly after they had walked for several hours.
"Well, presumably when we see it," Dirk said back.
"You're supposed to ask something back," Dave reminded him.
"If you tell me off for forgetting, that'll throw off a bandersnatch just as well," Dirk shrugged.
"Not if you correct me,"
Dave groaned, although he really didn't like the rules any more than Dirk did, though neither of them knew it of the other.
"What if we take a short break?" Dirk said, stopping in front of a large tree. "Just to review how to act."
"I don't need a review," Dave grumbled gruffly, stepping onto a gnarled root to rest his back against the smooth surface of the bark.
"Really? You sound a bit miffed, a bit annoyed even," Dirk said, his voice even and unbothered as he leant next to his brother.
"Not even a bit," Dave huffed, the fingers on his free hand drumming against the wood, producing a hollow thrum that was almost a tune.
"I bet I could make a nice instrument out of whatever kind of tree this is."
"You're avoiding the question," Dirk squinted at him. "You can't be angry at me for forgetting to stay consistent and then forget to control your emotions."
"Yes, I can."
Dave continued to drum his fingers on the tree, refining his tune until he could softly sway his head in time with the imaginary rhythm.
"You're doing it more now. You're doing music again," Dirk pointed out.
"You're taking charge again," Dave replied, literally without missing a beat.
"I bet I could grow one of these back home. Should I check for seeds on my own, or will you help?"
"I shouldn't. We have a job to do," Dirk grit his teeth.
"You know that."
"Well, then I shouldn't have helped you hide those schematics you made earlier," Dave said.
"And I don't hear anything coming our way."
Dirk's mouth puckered like the time he had bitten into a lemon, thinking it was an underripe orange, and his face turned down as he scanned the ground around the tree.
"Fine, but we have to keep moving soon. We can't stay overnight, and you know that," he said roughly.
"I do. I won't keep us," Dave said, looking up to scan the branches for any hanging seeds.
"I still wish I knew what it was called, though." Dirk's head whipped around as Dave's breath caught in his throat, and followed his gaze up to the branches, where he saw what had caused such a strong reaction. Sitting curiously in the branches was a bird of some sort, crouched as it peered down at them, a most unsettling creature. Its legs were barely visible under its bright green plumage that would otherwise have hidden it among the leaves, were its head not stretched from its uncannily long neck to peer down at the twins. The plumes on its neck were a mix of bright colours, and coiffed almost like a fancy lady's hat, with a wide brim and a single feather perfectly askew. Although to the two boys it looked altogether very strange, and its wide black beak bent like a grin, silhouetted against the snow-white feathers on its face.
"I'm afraid that you won't find any seeds of this tum-tum tree,"
the Jub-Jub bird, which it must have been, appearing so suddenly to participate in Dave's passions as it was, squawked at them.
"Although I must say you have good taste. Not many can appreciate the good sight nor sound of this particular specimen."
"I don't like it that much," Dave said quickly. "It's just something to waste some time with before we keep going."
"We were only looking for a seed because we thought it might serve as just as good of a distraction back at home," Dirk added calmly.
"Really? It seemed like you were quite enamored with it. Not that I can blame you."
The bird tilted its head at them, ruffling its wings slightly, revealing strange clawed hands at the tips of them.
"Where are you off to in such a hurry anyways? And with such sharp swords as well?"
"Nothing interesting, lots of paperwork," Dirk answered swiftly, hefting the weight of his pack back onto his shoulders and quickly striding back down through the trees. "Come on, we have to get going."
"Even so quickly? For paperwork?"
A different, lispy voice called out from behind as Dave started following his brother. The twins quickly swung around to see a beast on four legs, almost like a tiger, but with brilliant blue stripes instead of orange ones. Its frame was scrawny and whip-thin, like it was starved, and it had a mane like a lion but split down the middle in colour, one side blue and the other red. Its eyes matched, and four curved horns sprouted from its head, two on each side, one pair just behind the other.
"That's just what I was thinking,"
the Jub-Jub bird remarked as it leapt down to the forest floor, its legs stretching it to its full height, standing a good foot above the twins.
Who could be in such a rush for something so dull?
They're alive for sure.
The Bandersnatch, which it again must have been, showing itself as Dirk began to take the lead, continued speaking.
Swords like that don't spell good things.
Oh dear. Do you think they're here for Carcat?
The Jub-Jub Bird sighed.
That would be quite unfortunate. You would be so upset about that.
Flimmyth even,
the Bandersnatch agreed. Who's that? Who's Carcat? Dave asked, despite himself and the disastrous situation.
Carcat is him,
the strange pair answered, looking behind the twins into the woods. They heard him before they saw him as they turned around in sync. The whiffling of the air as something passed through it came first, like a mournful whistle to their fate. Then came the sound of him, a low inquisitive growl that reminded the twins of the roaring of a stream, bubbling up through the creature's throat with a warbling edge. Finally came Carcat himself, who they had been looking for the entire time. The beast stood at least 15 feet high, and was terrifyingly monstrous. Great leathery black wings sprouted from his back, pushing aside the trees like blades of grass as it came towards them. His arms and legs were as thick as the trees themselves. Both ended in large, bright red claws almost as long as their swords, and almost as sharp from the sheen of them. The limbs were covered in short black fur that ended as they reached the torso, which strangely looked to be covered in a large buttoned vest in a tasteful grey, reaching up the creature's neck to its head, which had a wild mop of black hair broken by a pair of rounded horns above the face. The face! A maw of hooked, sharp teeth that formed a horrific grin sat beneath a pair of eyes so bright and warm they looked aflame. The pair of flaming eyes were peering at the pair of men.
More?
The Jabberwock, Carcat, sighed disappointingly, his voice rolling past the twins like a thunderstorm. That was enough to shock them from their stupor and into actions, albeit ineffective ones, as the pair dropped their bags and leapt towards their foe with swords held tightly in their grips. Their skills were well honed, and their training was all-encompassing, their movements perfectly in sync, to their own detriment. Bouncing from the sides of trees towards their target's neck, their paths crossed with one another, and also a large, clawed hand that easily trapped them in a vice grip, their swords held impotently against their sides.
"This is getting really goddamn annoying,"
the Jabberwock growled.
"Maybe you should start eating them,"
the Bandersnatch commented as the twins stiffened in terror.
"That would be quite ghastly,"
the Jub-Jub Bird scoffed.
"You should just send them back again."
"It's kind of late for that now,"
the Jabberwock said, his other clawed hand fiddling with one of the buttons on his coat.
"The sun's about to go down. I think we'll have to stay the night at least."
"No, we can just leave. We'll leave,"
Dirk lied as he tried not to get sliced by the claws around him.
"No, really, I insist. It'd be completely asinine to go sailing in the dark."
The Jabberwock snorted as he began to trudge back the way he came.
"You enjoy it just fine, I promise."
After another hour of quiet travel, they were inexplicably carried off to a cottage of some sort, with a dining table outside with chairs of a variety of sizes. The largest sat at the head, and seemed clearly designed for the Jabberwock. The creature in question placed the twins in front of the front door of the cottage, after carefully removing their vorpal swords from their grasps.
"You should be able to sleep here,"
he explained.
"Kanaya likes to repair all the fabrics and things when she has the time, so it'll be quite nice."
"Who's that?" Dirk asked. He wasn't keen on the idea of another person on the island with them.
"Oh, that's me, of course,"
the Jub-Jub Bird tutted at them.
"You have a name?"
Dave blurted out.
"Of course I have a name. Who doesn't?"
Kanaya chirped.
"I imagine it would be quite difficult to communicate without one."
"What are yours, by the way?"
Carcat, which the brothers realized really must have been the Jabberwock's name, asked them.
"The actual Frumious one is Solix, just so you know."
"That's Riff coming from you."
Solix, which apparently referred to the Bandersnatch, growled, proving Carcat correct.
"You're always raving about wherever you go. It's a miracle you ever started screaming at more assassins coming ashore."
"I am perfectly capable of being a good host when I need to be,"
Carcat growled back, which somehow did not give Solix any pause.
"You, meanwhile, have no care for the circumstances."
The monstrous pair continued bickering about nothing in particular as Kanaya sidled around and stalked towards the twins.
"They'll be like this for a while yet," she warbled. "I do hope you sleep well. We'll be sure to come by in the morning for breakfast."
"We won't be staying that long," Dirk said quickly. We'll be gone by daybreak. Maybe sooner.
Dave mumbled.
That's a terrible idea!
Carcat bellowed suddenly, apparently having listened to the conversation.
Honestly, running through the woods on the island in the dark without a guide.
What's the worst that could happen? We run into a bunch of beasts? Dirk asked sarcastically in total defiance of basic preservation. When he finished speaking, he realized that perhaps he was more tired than he thought.
I resent that,
Solix grumbled as Carcat ignored him, his flaming eyes squinting down at Dirk.
There's less friendly faces in the woods,
Carcat chided.
There's a snark for one.
We packed a railway share just in case, Dirk countered.
Gamzee's a boojum sometimes,
Carcat continued.
A railway share won't keep you from disappearing if you meet him like that.
That gets Dirk to quiet down, and both of the twins to pale slightly. Their brothers had told them what to do if they encountered a snark, just in case, but vanishing away at the behest of a boojum was a terrifying thought that kept them both awake on more nights than they cared to admit. The beasts seemed to be able to tell anyways, from the way their expressions softened, and took their leave shortly after the twins entered the cottage. It was, in fact, surprisingly nice inside. Just as good as back home, perhaps even better with the abundance of comforts and noticeable lack of any watching eyes. There were several fine beds to choose from, not to mention clothes far more comfortable than their clean white suits for them to change into, but the twins picked the pair that were pressed right against one another, and farthest from the door and windows.
I don't know how to feel about this, Dave said quietly as they laid in their beds.
We're alive, for now.
But we failed, Dirk nodded back.
Which could also just be for now.
I don't think it is, Dave replied.
Well, we can't go back without his head.
Dirk rolled over under the covers.
So we have to find a way to kill him, or wait until he decides to kill us, and with how Kanaya mentioned a breakfast, that might be sooner than we think.
Dave shuddered to think of it, and the both of them had quite restless sleep, as they worried about what might await them in the morning. As it happened, what awaited them in the morning was perhaps more unexpected and more unusual to them than violence. As they stepped out of the cottage, having been awoken by the sounds of thumping outside, they found the three creatures from the day before sitting at the table, which was covered in dishes full of food.
Come take a seat,
Kanaya waved a wing at them, a roll of some sort clutched in her grasp.
We've brought out quite the assortment.
The twins sat next to each other, as far away from the head of the table where Carcat was tearing into a hunk of some sort of meat as they could. There were plenty of dishes within reach, however. Eggs and sausages, teas and juices, and bread with such a variety of spreads they had never seen before. They didn't know if they could have anything, but even if they did, they didn't know at all where to start.
You look like you'd like the marmalade,
Solix said derisively to Dirk before the latter could even open his mouth.
And the other one probably wants apple butter.
Where did you even get all of this? Dirk mumbled as he carefully reached for the respective jars. Is there a general store here or something?
Well, there's lots of fools coming to hunt one thing or another,
Carcat said as he chewed.
And there's no point leaving their supplies to rot.
That made enough sense, although neither of the twins were paying attention, too focused on their food. Solix was, unfortunately, very correct about their tastes, however he did it. All other concerns were forgotten for a moment as the brothers got to enjoy their food for once. The beasts allowed them, only waiting until the pair had finished to start asking questions. Kanaya was most interested in their hobbies, asking Dave all sorts of questions about music and song, and listening intently when she managed to get him to share some of his speed poems, while telling Dirk all sorts of things about mechanisms and science that he couldn't fathom how she even knew. Solix, meanwhile, didn't seem to ask questions. They were instead phrased as complaints or jabs or guesses that were seemingly intended to be a bit too on the mark, which they often were. Conversely, he seemed most engaged with the conversation, that is, both delighted and frustrated, when the brothers followed suit. This was most apparent when Dave concluded that Solix must be the sort of person who couldn't sleep if he didn't have his bed perfectly symmetrical, which caused the Bandersnatch to spend the rest of the day in delightedly frustrated silence. Carcat was more strange to the pair, asking them questions that were heavier than the other two's. Why they were here? What did they want to get out of killing him? What they wanted out of life? What had they actually done in their lives that they were proud of? None of which they had suitable answers to.
I don't know why any of that matters, Dirk finally said instead of admitting he couldn't answer.
Because it's the sort of thing I have to ask if I want to know more about you two,
Carcat responded.
I don't get to talk to a lot of people.
Is that why you haven't eaten us yet? Dave asked.
No, I haven't eaten you because I don't want to, and that's stupid and lame.
Carcat huffed, which, due to his size, caused a large gust of air to travel down the table. And that was that. Neither twin wanted to argue with that, and the matter-of-factness with which it was said did do quite a bit to set them at ease. After everyone had finished talking, Carcat stood up to his full height and walked around the table, Kanira and Solix getting up and following as he passed. He stopped in front of the brothers, who had already jumped from their seats when the host first stood. Carcat lowered one of his hands and looked at them expectantly. Dirk again took the lead, carefully stepping around the claws and standing in Carcat's palm. Dave followed quickly after Carcat's gaze shifted to him, stepping exactly where Dirk had and standing next to him.
You might want to sit down for this,
Carcat advised, prompting them both to sit down in the ample room provided, at which point Carcat raised his hand off the ground and began walking away from the cottage. He took them on a short tour throughout the island, showing them some nice clearings, explaining the flora, but no fauna, he assured them he wasn't going to lead them straight to the snark that could be a budgum, and generally making sure they had an enjoyable experience despite the circumstances before taking them back to the cottage for lunch. Lunch wound up being quite similar to breakfast, but with more appropriate fare, and dinner again the same, and so things passed as Dirk and Dave stayed in the cottage on the island. The days were spent eating or on excursions with the three beasts, or, were their hosts not present, amusing themselves with passions never free to explore due to their inevitable duties, for what good that focus wound up doing for them in that regard. They got better at having answers to Carcat's questions. It was several days later at breakfast that Dave upset this routine by surprising everyone.
Could I have my sword back, please? He asked quietly.
Everyone stopped eating to look at him, including Dirk, who wanted to ask him what the fuck he was doing, but thought it was better to present a united front.
Are you still trying to cut my head off?
Carcat groaned.
No,
Dave gulped, seemingly looking more nervous.
I don't want to cut my hair.
Dirk did his best to not look shocked, which was very well, all things considered, as their monstrous hosts looked quite relieved.
Well, if that's all,
Carcat responded.
You don't need a sword for that. I can cut it for you if you'd like.
With what?
Dave asked. It sounded too good to be true, but the Jabberwock didn't seem the type to deftly wield a pair of shears.
What do you think?
Carcat snorted, splaying his hands out to show off his massive red claws.
I'm very careful. I've given myself enough trims to not cause any bleeding.
Dave stared at the claws as he thought. He'd always been warned about the claws of the Jabberwock, but he couldn't be any more caught than he already was, and Carcat had been quite pleasant, all things considered, and he had been the one to bring it up anyways.
Sure, he said simply, turning back to his food. As long as it's shorter than I have it now.
By a lot. You want a haircut too, Dirk?
Salix growled out as he tore into some sort of meat.
Keep the identical look between you.
Dave didn't respond as Dirk tilted his head, but he really hoped he didn't say yes. The whole point in cutting his hair was to be different for a change. It wasn't like there was a point in trying to be exactly the same now, any more than pretending he didn't like music.
Dirk began. No. I like my hair as long as it is.
Just as long?
Kanaya asked, looking up from the seed loaf she had been pecking at to stare at Dirk.
Oh, would you prefer a different style, then?
Dirk shifted uncomfortably in his seat from the sudden attention before sheepishly nodding.
Well, I might be able to do something about that,
Carcat said, prompting Dirk to stare straight into his eyes for the first time since they met.
If you're interested, I could do both your hair at the same time after we finish eating.
I am very interested,
Dirk said before diving back into his plate with a frenzy more impatient than ravenous. Dave followed suit as their hosts either rolled their eyes or tried not to chuckle. It was barely 15 minutes later that the pair were sat on smooth stones a short ways apart, as Carcat stood behind and between them.
You're both going to have to stay extremely still for this, by the way,
he said, the claws on one hand sifting through Dave's dangling hair, while his other steadied himself as his hair stared down at Dirk from above.
Got it,
Dave said as Dirk nodded silently, neither of them moving a single muscle as Carcat smiled.
Good, he said.
opening his cavernous maw and lowering it over Dirk's head, the claws on his hands tightening on Dave's hair, who tried not to flinch at the sudden pressure, nor the sudden disappearance of his brother's face. Dirk reacted very calmly to the sudden darkness and the wicked teeth just inches from his neck. It was very warm in Karkat's mouth, warm and stale and wet. Karkat's tongue was busy lapping at his hair, dampening it with slimy saliva that dribbled slightly down Dirk's neck as he moved one of his hands on top of his lap to a thumbs up, to hopefully let Dave know he was alive. It was terrifying, if he was being honest, to be in the biting jaws he had been warned of all his life, and to be so intimately aware of just how precariously close he was to the edge of death, more than he had been since arriving to the island. He did trust Karkat enough, though, and the lapping at his hair quickly became soothing as he felt the saliva drying in place. Dave was experiencing much the same for the most part, after he got over the jolt of fear that Dirk had been the one decapitated, and that he might soon be next. Instead, Karkat's claws deftly snipped away at his hair, shortening it without difficulty as Dave tried not to squirm away from the fallen hairs that tickled at his neck. The claws never came close to his skin. The movement of air as they cut and slashed was all he could feel, and it was safe, despite the reality that they could so easily slice through his neck instead. Both brothers were thus quite at ease through the short process, and would not admit that they missed the sensation when Karkat pulled away, and they looked at one another to see how they looked. Dave's hair was much shorter, ending just at the bottom of his ears while still maintaining the same smooth, well-combed style that he had worn all his life. Dirk, meanwhile, had his hair sticking up so much that it seemed almost to defy gravity, in a wild, tousled spike. "That suits you way better," Dave said, tilting his head and gesturing for Dirk to turn so he could see the back of his head. "Took the words right out of my mouth," Dirk responded as he complied. "You look a lot more comfortable like that." "I like the wind on my neck," Dave shrugged, letting his hand ruffle the golden strands as he turned to show Dirk what it looked like. "So you're both pleased, I take it?" Karkat asked, looking quite proud of himself. "Extremely pleased," Dirk said, turning to face him with gritted teeth. "Thank you. Thank you very much."
"Gratitude is a good look on you, Dirk,"
Karkat said smugly, pointing at him with one outstretched claw just a few inches from his chest. Dirk didn't say a word, he just gulped, and leant forward to lay a soft kiss on the tip of the claw. Karkat didn't seem to know how to respond to that, blinking wordlessly down at Dirk as he straightened up. Dave didn't either, but he wasn't one to be left out, so he strode next to his twin and copied him, leaning to leave a kiss of his own on the still outstretched claw.
"You too,"
Karkat said slowly,
"are very, very queer. In every meaning of the word."
"Is that a bad thing?" Dave asked tentatively.
"Of course not,"
Karkat replied quickly.
"Not in the least."
Things were different after that. Karkat came to visit Dirk and Dave more often on his own, and the three of them spent more time near the cottage, rather than exploring the island. Much of their time was spent doing nothing at all, save lazing around as Dirk and Dave sat against or upon Karkat's large form, lazily braiding or combing his mass of hair. Dave and Dirk weren't well-versed in the ways of the world, but neither were they so foolish as to not understand what they were participating in, not to mention that it wasn't appropriate for young men, although they couldn't care much at all about that at that point. They simply allowed themselves to enjoy this new and fragile thing they had. The biggest problem was actually among the twins themselves, who had never fought before and yet found themselves in a quite aggressive and intractable conflict for a few weeks. The source of the problem was obvious. Both of them quite enjoyed their relationship to the Jabberwock, and yet they had both grown so happy at being different from one another that they couldn't stand to be similar in almost any way at all, but especially not something this important. They were fairly capable of behaving themselves when spending time with the others, but when left alone at the cottage they said barely a word to one another, and when they did, the words were at quite a volume. Eventually, however, they were able to finally reconcile, agreeing that in this one space they could be content to share, as siblings should. When they mentioned this to Karkat a week later, he couldn't possibly comprehend what the issue even was, but they weren't pretending not to hate each other anymore, and so he too was content. Eventually, however, the thought of home began taking more and more space in the minds of the twins, while in part there was some homesickness for the Borogoves and Toves that they remembered from their youth, their greater worry was that they were unlikely to be the last swordsmen sent to the island. If the next fame chaser who came was more effective than they were, it could quite quickly spell the end of their new happy existence. They still didn't have their swords, after all, and they weren't as well practiced after the months of such delight. They brought it up in a quiet moment, as they were perched on Karkat's hand watching the sun go down. "We should probably go back soon," Dirk said, breaking the silence. "The boat is still there, and we have our packs, but we need our swords for that." Karkat was very still for several minutes, and Dirk and Dave turned to look away from the sunset and up at him. His eyes were squinted as he looked down at the sunset and pointedly not at them.
"Yes, that's so,"
he said more quietly than anything he had before. "We should," Dave added, his hands fidgeting with the hem of his shirt, "go check on things, you know? Make sure everything's fine over there."
"I see,"
Karkat said, standing from the ground and bringing the pair up to his face as he did so.
"Perhaps it was optimistic of me to assume you wanted to stay."
"We'd like to," Dave said. "But we don't know if anyone else might come after you."
"So what, you're off to hunt them instead?"
Karkat tilted his head, his gaze unblinkingly focused. Neither Dirk nor Dave answered immediately. They hadn't been entirely sure what they would do when they got back home, but as Karkat asked, they found they could both answer easily. "Yes," they said together, a shared conviction coming through their words.
"Fine then,"
Karkat sighed.
"You can leave whenever you want. You'll have to bring your swords by in the morning when I say goodbye."
He did in fact bring the swords with them the next morning to take the twins back to the shore, letting them strap the blades to their hips as they sat in his hand. K'nair and Solix said their goodbyes at the cottage, letting the three of them go off to the boat on their own where Karkat sat them down on the sand. The three of them stood in silence without pushing the boat out to sea. "You know," Dave finally said, "I'll definitely need another haircut when it grows longer again. Mine is going to stop being held up too, I'll bet," Dirk agreed. "It'd be nice to get that fixed up, if we're welcome to come back when we're done."
"Of course you'd be welcome,"
Karkat smiled lightly, his sharp teeth glistening in the morning light. "Then we'll definitely come back," Dave smiled back. "As soon as we can," Dirk smiled as well.
"What a frabjous day that'll be,"
Karkat chortled. The brothers sat in the boat and let Karkat push them into the water. He stood there watching them leave over the horizon before wading back amongst the trees. The brothers in turn watched their host and barber, and quite a bit more than that, until the waves hid him from view, and so turned their attention to their featureless map to make their way back to their old home's shore. 'Twould be brillig when they arrived, and again when they left with their old home gone, their manxome foes slain, and a few toves and borogoves with them for the trip, as they galumphed back into the boat. And so the Beamish boys were happily caught up by the claws of the Jabberwock, and they all lived happily ever after. The end.
The Homestuck Fan Author Coalition is a place for authors to write, brainstorm, discuss, and collaborate. Link available in description. Suburban Jungle by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.